Hi, you're listening to Lawbiz News, and I'm Glenn Duker.
Hi, you're also listening to Wes Ward. I'll be the co-host today on Lawbiz News with Glenn Duker. Glenn, today we're discussing a very interesting topic, I think, which is commercial lease defaulting. Now, I know that in your practice you deal a lot with both sides of the fence in terms of from the tenant's perspective, but also from the landlord's perspective on this, and there's a million different scenarios that can sometimes happen, I'm sure. Probably a really, really good starting point is to look at what a default or a breach of a commercial agreement looks like in all the scenarios, so that then people know what we're talking about today. How does that sound?
Yeah, sure. A breach of a lease can happen in many ways. The most frequent way, Wes, is when there's a default in payment of the rent. That's the one you hear about the most. That's the one that it results in a lockout notice being stuck on the door and the changing of locks and so on. There are other types of defaults as well. You can have a tenant who has carried out unauthorised works at the leased premises. You could have a tenant who is using the premises for a use other than the permitted use. They're just a couple of examples. Lease defaults can be remedied as a rule, and generally if it's a retail lease, there really needs to be an opportunity for a remedy to take place. The landlord's got to afford the tenant that opportunity, as a rule.
So, you know, you talk about remedy and giving the opportunity, you know, in the payment issue, yeah? Like, it'd be a bit harsh if they missed payment by 3 days and then the landlord comes down with a sledgehammer. Is that an issue, or has there got to be a remediation process built into your commercial agreements? Is, you know, that could be a significant sticking point.
Absolutely. Look, if it's a non-retail lease, a landlord can enter the premises typically if the rent's 1 day overdue.
Right.
If it's a retail lease, it's still incumbent upon a landlord to provide some notice period. And even then, if it's a non-retail lease, it's best practice to provide some sort of a notice period to a tenant before you go and enter. The reason for that is the tenant has the right to an action which is called relief against forfeiture.
So a
tenant could, for example, a tenant of a, it could be a florist, for instance, who has been locked out for non-payment of rent. The florist could apply to VCAT for relief against forfeiture. Now, if that tenant has not been a persistent defaulter in terms of non-payment of rent, and it's the first time that this has happened as well, there's a very high chance that the tenant's going to be able to have their lease restored.
Right. What sort of time frame is this? Like, you know, if the landlord comes in with, you know, right, get out, and then you go to VCAT, which is the governing body in all these property and commercial areas in Victoria. What sort of time frames are we talking? Is it like if they haven't paid over 45 days, or is it between 6 days or 3 months?
Well, rent is due as and when it falls due, which is usually on the first of the month or whenever the lease says that it's due. Now, if you're a day late, it's a default. What generally happens is the landlord will issue a default notice and provide a period of 14 days to remedy the default. So there's that window of opportunity. And after that, that's when the lockouts come, if the landlord's so disposed to do it. Now, it doesn't always suit a landlord to lock out a tenant, but that's the exposure that the tenant faces, and it's a risk that needs to be taken seriously.
So would, after that 14-day period, be typical of a time frame when, say, a landlord would go to VCAT? Is it normally that sort of trigger point after a, I'll give you 2 weeks to fix this up?
Is that
normal, or would it be even further again? Like, it's getting quite extenuating.
Well, once the landlord locks the tenant out, that's it from the landlord's point of view. They, unless they have, they need to sue the tenant for some other thing. They've normally got a security deposit there they can draw upon, and so on. But it's the tenant who has to move very quickly after the lockout I think if they want relief against forfeiture for a number of reasons, not least of which is practical, commercial reasons.
Yeah, if you're a retailer.
Exactly. I mean, hello, you've been locked out of your shop. It's not good to be out of business for three or 4 weeks before you get around to doing something about it. So what do? You go back and you get straight into VCAT and try to get it heard urgently.
Okay, all right. Now, if we look at some other breaches, obviously we've covered the non-payment issue, but when you start looking at unauthorised works, that sounds like a very specific legal term. What can unauthorised works look like or take shape as?
Yeah, sure. Well, strictly speaking, all tenant fit-out needs to be approved by the landlord. And sometimes tenants don't understand this. They think, oh, well, I've done my initial fit-out. I get in there. Oh, I think I might make a few changes. Now, if they're internal changes, often a landlord may not even be bothered anyway or too fussed, provided the make-good provisions of the lease are handled properly at the end of the lease. But the issue is that if there's some knock-on effect, for example, a tenant might carry out some works and do some damage to another part of the building, which affects another tenant.
Yes.
Now, you can imagine this is just a huge it's a huge risk for the tenant because, I mean, litigation's going to follow or compensation's going to follow because the works are unauthorised. And this is why these clauses are in leases because to help tenants not fall into default and to not cause problems that are ultimately going to cost them money as well as the landlord.
A lot more money, if they just cut off the power to the rest of the building or something like that.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's right. So, look, that's a default, strictly speaking. Now, if a landlord's looking to take a particular advantage and sometimes a landlord is wanting to move on a tenant for various reasons, and they can look for breaches in a lease. So a tenant needs to be very sure that they're circumspect and that they're not ever in breach of their lease because it may not be a problem now, but just because the landlord hasn't done anything about it straight away, they may do something about it later on, and it may be very difficult to remedy the breach.
Is that a typical issue? Like they may, you know, the tenant may want something done and then it comes a bit of an issue because they feel like the landlord's dragging their feet or, you know, it is sort of technically part of the lease agreement to, I don't know, keep water services going hunky-dory or whatever or maintenance issues or something like, you know, you've got a leaking pipe in the ceiling of your showroom and, you know, it's creating a nasty stain and so it's not a deal breaker but eventually it's going to drive the tenant nuts.
Well, yeah, absolutely. These are landlord responsibilities and so just as the tenant has a responsibility to pay the rent and pay for the outgoings and do their bit and be circumspect, the landlord has an obligation to provide quiet enjoyment of the premises.
What do you call it?
Enjoyment.
That sounds like another legal phrase.
It does. It's from another age, isn't it? That term, but it kind of means what it sounds like,
which is
that the tenant can quietly enjoy the premises without the interruption of the landlord.
Right.
So the landlord has to provide services in all sorts of arguments, and there can be shades of grey as to who's done what. Mm. And for example, you can have a blocked toilet. Whose fault was it? If it's the tenant's fault, the tenant's got to fix it. There might be some problem in the pipes, though, which then can become a structural issue, which isn't the tenant's fault.
Right.
And many a plumber has been called out on a Friday evening to run a camera down a pipe to try and work out who's right or wrong.
Oh, right. So ultimately the plumber would be the arbiter of of that particular...
Potentially, yeah.
Right. Okay. So now, you know, we've covered non-payment, but also other breach scenarios like unauthorised changes. If we start looking at permitted use, I think that sounds like another legal term.
Yes, yes.
And I'm sure that that's grey enough to imply all sorts of things, and it's probably worth uncollapsing what permitted use really means and how it applies to, I suppose, in respect to tenants more than anything.
Mm, sure. Well, the permitted use is what the tenant is allowed to use the premises for. Now, often I see a lot of tenants come to me with new leases and they say, can you advise me in relation to this lease? And sometimes the permitted use is very narrow. Okay. And I always encourage them to try and get a much broader definition, because if